Kevin Kimerson Show. It's 503-733-333. I don't know what I'm doing. 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, storm is freaking me out. I'm here in my nice little brightly lit office, says the email, and yet I am curled up under my desk about to wet myself. I have always been strangely afraid of Storm, mainly because I'm sure she can beat the crap out of me, but now she's scaring me on a totally different level. Greatest woman ever, says Troy in Lake Oswego. All right, well, we just talked to Storm Large from Rockstar Supernova, who, and it's not a secret. I mean, well, first of all, I didn't know that thing about her being a heroin user. That was a little bit of, hello, you know, what about it? What, I mean, and I'm trying to be all cool, like, mm-hmm, yes, which I that's a thing I had no idea about.
Yeah, I didn't
I mean, whatever. I don't pass judgment. It's just one of those things that it's a strange thing to just have casually revealed during a phone call. So you can go to rockstar.supernova. Rockstar.msn.
Oh, and the new reality shows up today, too. I'm going to go home and watch that.
The new webisode?
Yeah.
You got to go home and watch Live from Baghdad. You got to finish that.
I know. I totally got into Scrubs this weekend, so I didn't really watch anything
else. Except you got like that $3.99 DVD player that's not working at all. So. Anyways, you go to rockstar.msn.com and read the Storm blog about the haunted house thing, about whatever it is. And I'm so torn because it's like on the one, because I don't believe in any of that crap. But on the other hand, you can't, but on the other hand, Storm is not somebody you can just, you know, discount out of hand. She's not a nutcase. I mean, not in this kind of way anyway. Mm. So she's not, so I just, you know, you
no,
never
totally
know what
believe
to...
her. And reading about that house's history, I mean, a lot of messed up stuff happened there.
It's true. Now, and again, I've never had any sort of, well, let's go around the room. It's obligatory. Paranormal experiences.
No,
Sarah?
I'm just going to go, yes, but I don't want to.
Really?
Talk it.
No, yeah. But see, you can't say yes and then not tell us. You can't.
In the sorority that I was in college, I had a lot of bad experiences there.
Somebody dumped pig's blood on you?
No, but there's a sleeping porch. So when you're in a sorority, I don't know if a lot of people know.
Is it like a sun porch?
No, well, everyone sleeps in one big room together. And it's up in the attic.
Really?
Yes.
Hello.
There's like 80 girls sleeping in an attic, bunk beds. It's very glamorous. And on the sleeping porch, I was, I don't know, it was like my freshman year. And they had taken us out and gotten us really drunk. And then I ended up sleeping there. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a girl sitting in the bed across from me. And then looked over, she was gone. Found out some girl had choked on her own vomit in the bed I was sleeping in.
Oh,
died.
Oh.
Well, that's
oh,
a college thing
Jesus
anyway.
Jesus God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I was really drunk, and I had felt someone push me over onto my side. And
the ghost of Keith Moon.
Yeah, I guess she was trying to save me from vomiting on myself.
Mama Cass's ghost was there.
And then I'd have horrible things like books flying off the shelf.
Now, how do you know that the girl choked? I mean, was it just somebody told you? I mean,
no,
they been screwing with
you? It was the first week that I was in the sorority. And so I was living in the dorms, but I just stayed there overnight. So I told one of the older girls about it, how that had happened. And then they showed me some articles and stuff about how this girl died in the 70s.
Dude, is it like the thing in the movies where you're sitting there in front of the microfilm machine and like the newspapers are scanning by and you, and then you suddenly have to go back because you see like, you know, 19-year-old chokes on vomit. Yeah, totally. If somebody pushed you onto your side, that's kind of
no,
weird.
No, and I would sleepwalk off of that sleeping porch almost every night, and I haven't sleptwalked since. It's really unnerving, and I was on a top bunk, too. I don't know. I hated that place.
No, I'm not trying. I mean, I'm not trying to do the cheesy, but it's like, how can you not? That's the cheesy radio thing, but it's like, how can you not? Storm sitting there 20 minutes talking about she's got dead girls whispering in her ear, like, I mean, it's freaky. It's,
yeah.
And see, but I'm the guy, Tim Riley.
What?
Paranormal experiences? Because radio stations are always they're always notorious. Well, because the old, and I never worked there, but the old KWJJ, the mansion. Mm-hmm. Did you work in the mansion?
No, I didn't work there.
KWJJ, which is used to be our sister station when we were at Entercom, and then before that Fisher, used to be in a place called, and I never worked there, but before we were on First, used to be in a building called the Mansion. And in fact, Rick Bubba Taylor, who works at Couple, used to work there. And I guess it's in some book of haunted houses. There's some Haunted Locations America book that has a thing about the old KWJJ studio. And he said that like he'd be alone in the building and like, back in the old days when there weren't 15 radio stations in a building, he was the only station in the building, the only people there, and he said that he would like, the phone lines would be picked up and the phone would obviously be in use, but he was the only one in the building. And I'm not, again, it's, and I always feel like the guy who's, like, you know what it is with me? I feel like the only kid who can't see the magic eye painting. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just sitting there staring, going, I don't see anything. And then you have the Clyde Lewises of the world, and Clyde will always say that I don't get any paranormal visitations because they know I'm a non-believer. That's Clyde's whole thing. Clyde's whole take on it is that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that I don't believe, and so therefore they're never going to, which seems freaking retarded. It was like with God, you know, it's like I always say that I'm an agnostic. I'm not an atheist. I don't disbelieve in God, because what the hell do I know? I got nothing. But you figure if God was going to make him, or aliens or ghosts or somebody was going to make their presence known to somebody, it would be to like the guy who's the non-believer. What's the point of appearing to somebody who already believes? So I got nothing. So I...
When I was in Boston last time, too, something happened.
See, is it, how... It,
well, it was, I was just going to the... we were in this really old pub. I was going to the bathroom, walked down this long, dark hallway. My sister was sitting, like, watching me walk down the hall. I went into the bathroom, shut the door. Immediately after I shut it, someone started jiggling the handle really hard and pounding on it. And pounding on the door, so I just washed my hands and opened the door, and there was nobody out there.
You weren't, which just wasn't some guy who needed
to whiz? No, it was in the middle of the day. There was no one there. It was just my sister and I stopped by, and I came out. I'm like, Heather, who was that person that was banging on the door?
I didn't see any person.
There wasn't anybody. It was weird. Imagine someone just jostling that handle and, like, pounding on the door, and you open it, and there's no one there.
I'm not disbelieving. It's just frustrating, because I really am I'm the doubting Thomas. I'm the guy I need to put my hand in the wound of Jesus. I'm totally that guy.
All right, Tim Riley.
Tim Riley. We can tell from your expression that you have one.
No.
Come on. We can tell. You have to tell us.
Yes, it was a dead relative.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh. What happened?
Well, I was having a stress-filled day, as one often does in this business. And I was sitting in my apartment in Los Angeles, unable to pay the rent.
And by the way, I should just note that it is emblematic of life in radio that response gets peals of laughter from us. Uh-huh. Sitting there, unstable in my career, unable to pay the rent, and our response is guffaws of laughter.
Uh-huh. And all of a sudden... Now, keep in mind that I'm not someone who does substances or drink any alcoholic beverages. This is in the middle of the afternoon.
And you're not a Clyde, meaning that you are not predisposed. Let's be honest, and I love Clyde, but you know that there are certain people... You know what it is? Clyde is sort of the anti-Velma in Scooby-Doo, where Velma's like, there's got to be a logical explanation for all this. To Clyde, Clyde is sort of her polar twin. Whereas when something happens, you know, like Clyde's response is, there's got to be a paranormal explanation for all this. Clyde's default setting is to assume that there is some specter-like explanation. You are not that way.
No.
You are a newsman.
Right. I believe in nothing.
Yes. Okay, so middle of the afternoon in L.A.
Right. And so couldn't pay the rent and so forth and very, very stressed out. And all of a sudden, a dead relative appears and says, everything is going to be okay. And then promptly disappears.
Now, appeared as in you could see this person?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where, like, in front, were they standing?
In my living room. No, I could see them, like, half of them. Like, a floating spirit.
And when they actually said, now, did you actually hear it, or was it sort of, they you felt them say this, or did you actually hear them?
Felt them say this. And then...
Like, the thought just sort of beamed into you?
Right.
Can I ask what relative? Was someone close to you?
My mother.
Okay.
So, then after that, I had this...
Well, that's what a mother does.
Yes. And then I had this very relaxed sensation that lasted the rest of the day.
See, that's him kind of envious of that, actually. I'm envious of that the way, because my mom had something like that happen. Like, my mom's a very religious person, and so my mom would, of course, say that this was the healing hand of Jesus or whatever. But I remember I don't even remember who it was now, but there was some relative. I think it was her sister. There was my Aunt Mary, who was in the hospital. Very sick, brink of death, blah, 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 blah. And my mom's telling the whole thing about how she was praying or whatever, and then it was almost what Storm said. My mom is praying, she's like, please heal my sister or whatever, and then my mom feels like a hand on her forehead, and not like in a bad way, but like a hand, or not her forehead, but on the top of her head, like a hand just sort of on the top of her head, and she said that immediately it was like, it's like she had a relaxation, like immediately it was sort of like a, and like a huge weight came off, and she said again it was the same thing, that she could feel the warmth of the hand. That was the thing. She could feel the warm hand on her, and she said at that moment she totally knew everything was going to be fine. My mom is also the one, she also has this recurring dream that she has told me about, where she will be at a dinner party around a big table, and she said that she's had this happen, and I have no reason to disbelieve my mom. Mothers don't lie. She's had this dream two or three times where she's at a dinner table, and it's with all of our family members, and she said that she will be there at the dinner table, and then all of the family members are talking about someone who is like sort of like, oh, it's so sad that so-and-so passed away. And then she has had that happen two or three times where then the person dies within the next day or two. It happened with my grandfather. It happened with my grandmother. And it did eventually happen with my Aunt Mary. Where they were at a dinner. She's had, has a dream, family dinner party going on. And they're all like, oh, it's a shame about Mary, how she passed away. That's like on a Sunday. Bam. Tuesday, Mary dead. So Which is totally, and it,
that's,
you know.
That's pretty unnerving.
And so I got the two halves of me where on the one hand I'm like, ah, it's bollocks. But on the other hand, it's like, why would my mom say that? And my mom's not a nutcase. She's not a religious zealot at this point in her life. She would have no reason to fabricate that. And so there's just, part of me is just, I feel about that, about a spirit appearing or whatever, somebody, whatever, Sarah's thing with the presence pushing on her side. I'm always just kind of sad about that because I always wonder that, I always figure that I'm just like such an obnoxious cynic.
No, because it just confuses you more.
Well, but you know what it is? I figure, I don't know, do I put off some, I'm asking you as though you're ghosts. Hello, specters, do I, but it's like, do I put off some sort of like specter do not call vibe? Is that what it is? Like, am I on some like ghost telemarketing do not call, get off my lawn kind of a thing?
Perhaps the spirits think you're a hopeless case.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's the thing. Is it?
Are you going to go buy yourself a Ouija board after the show?
No, because I.
Peter Ames Carlin is here.
Because I
saw him standing in the door.
Because I could pretend to believe, but it would just be that. It would just be pretending to believe. And they just don't care about me. I think that's it.
Well,
they just,
yeah, if you have to pretend to believe something, then you're probably not susceptible.
I'm saying I'm not open to it the way, like Storm says, that she's open to that kind of a thing. And I guess I'm just not. It's not like I'm sitting around going, damn, stupid ghost, I don't believe. It's just that I'm just too, I think I'm too left brain for the whole thing. I think I can't, conceive of it being real. And so, like, therefore, if it was, they're just going to pass me over anyway. I got nothing. All right. What a weird show this has been.
Here
we go. Just endless ghost calls. None of which we'll be getting to, by the way, so thanks.
We can play the show back on Halloween.
We really can, right here. This is, we just take a vacation. Mm-hmm. Is Peter Carlin here?
I saw him standing in the door.
Have we done the news?
No.
No, we can save for tomorrow. We got guests waiting and so on and so forth.
I feel bad. Talk
about ghosts.
We had all of this news to get to, and then the storm took up like 3 hours, and they're talking about ghosts and Peter Carlin.
That's the way it goes sometimes doing live local radio.
Promise you're not going to hate us.
No.
Promise?
Absolutely.
Swear.
Yep.
Sarah, make him swear.
He already swore.
Okay, and then this is not going to be used as some sort of evidence of some spurious claim that I dislike the City Desk.
I don't believe so. I've never made such a claim.
No,
this is the greatest story.
The listeners, though, the people have made that claim, and I'm mean and arbitrarily cutting off the City Desk.
Well, you send them to me,
okay,
and I'll deal with them accordingly.
What a strange program. Let's break now. We'll come back with Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian. Author of the, the new book, Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. You stay there. You know what's going to happen now is a ghost is going to appear in the studio and nobody's going to believe me. If this was a movie, as soon as you guys leave, you'll leave and then I'll look over and like a pan will be floating in the air. And then the walls will be covered with ooze. Back after this. Ozzy, don't go anywhere.
Someone's a joker.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program. This email says, Rick, you need to clarify. I just heard you say something about, quote, Storm being a heroin user. I had been listening, so I know what you meant, that she was a heroin user, but you probably need to qualify for the person who is, yes, that is in the past. That time has passed. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, wait, let me find that. Do we have a sound effect, or do you have one, or do I have one?
You have one.
All right, let's see. I don't have your theme.
I think we should use Brittany.
I don't know. Really? I'm just going to use Mel Gibson.
Right.
Oh,
I don't
yes.
think my thing's on, man.
Hello?
Is it on? Am I on? Oh, yeah.
There
Am
you
I
go.
On?
There's a volume knob here. You can turn these headphones up.
Oh, for the headphones.
I don't have a...
I could hear you, but on. I couldn't hear me.
This is flawless radio at its best. This is why CBS Radio pays us the medium dollars that they do. The moment has passed. I was gonna say, we don't have your theme song. It didn't make the transition over.
We need to introduce them with something.
All right, let's see.
Jews. The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew?
All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Carlin.
That's nice.
Well, it was either that or, wait, hold on. It was either
what
that
are you looking at?
Or
one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
All right, there you go.
Where do you get that stuff?
That's what we do here.
That's good. I like it.
You know what we do? We strip mine the culture.
Cool.
For the best. This, have you heard this illegal one big, this here?
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
No.
This is genius. It's part of a campaign ad. This
you
guy,
still have the full ad?
I do have the full ad. This guy, Vernon Robinson, who is in, was it South Carolina? I believe it was South Carolina.
Yeah.
He was a senator running for re-election, and he's a black man at that, which is strange.
Really?
Because he's this arch conservative. But it's this whole, like, race baiting, gay baiting series of ads that he did that were just crazy.
Wow.
I mean, they were insane. If you did not know better, you'd swear that they were some sort of horrific parody of the conservative approach to politics in this country. And that's actually an excerpt from one of his actual campaign ads, where I forget his opponent's name. But he's like, if so-and-so has its way, this country will be
one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Who do you suppose the voice talent is there?
I don't know.
That's what I always wonder when they do those ads. There's always the guy with the fearful voice, you know, or the voice where they say things like, Rick Emerson is at it again. You know, the one like,
seriously,
let's stop Rick Emerson. This time Rick's gone too far.
It's time to send Rick Emerson back to wherever.
Yeah.
No, too far. Things are always going too far in the news.
Yeah.
And it's always something that like you didn't think could go too far.
Yeah.
Have candy manufacturers gone too far? And you can tell they're arching an eyebrow.
No, that's a sweeps month story right there.
Totally. Let's see, what else do we have here? We have the end of Connie Chung singing Thanks for the Memory.
Thank you.
Oh, you heard this, guys.
So
no, stop it.
Much.
Wait, was there music behind that at one point?
Do you not know? Did you not hear that?
I was kind of marginally aware.
He doesn't listen to the show. Have you not gotten that?
I listen when I'm on it, but
that's not even about the show. That's just about.
But I work. How do I? I don't have one of those jobs where I can listen to the radio.
We came to do a show.
Oh, God.
For very little dough.
Oh!
By little, I mean I could make more working on Skid Row. That's cable.
By the way, she's wearing an evening gown here. Sitting on top of a piano.
Was there, but there was no music.
This is great. There's a man sitting at the piano doing nothing.
He looks like he's playing it.
Maury,
but he's not.
What a guy. Instead of asking who's the daddy,
you'll hear a fall
he
off the
could
piano
talk
in a minute.
Dubai. How stunned were we?
All right. Oh, it gets better.
Maury would talk instead of listening, unaware of the concept of whispering. And when he did say the right thing, it was so rare. Why should I care? Thanks.
Then she rolls off here in a moment.
For the memories. The thing I love the most about Hubby as co-host is all those other anchors were as dull as Melba toast. The sparks really flew.
Here she goes.
Five.
Thanks for the memories.
There you go.
You've got the fact that they let her do that is like a hostile gesture.
I've got bigger things to do.
You do, honey.
But Maury is back weighing in.
All right.
Fat babies, how taboo.
You could touch it.
All right. We're here with Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian. Oh, no, we played that endlessly.
The horror.
But that's what we do here. We sort of, you know what it is? We are sort of like one of those lobster traps. Like, you know, lobstermen, they don't, you don't use a rod and a reel. You just drop like a cage.
Yeah.
And then you just sort of, strain things as it goes. You strain the current as it goes by. Yeah. That's what we do. Jeez. We are the lobster tank of American radio. And we just, as things like that flow by, we grab them, isolate them, and they live on forever here.
Wow.
Don't even get me started on the Starbucks corporate fight song.
No.
Yeah.
You want to hear a little bit of that? Yes,
like
you do.
2 seconds.
This is real. This is an actual song. This is what they play at the Starbucks management conference, in which they have all the, management across the country there to get pumped up.
We built this Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Oh, Lord.
That expression makes it all
Starbucks
worthwhile.
And high and so pimp in Starbucks.
Do you suppose that's really Mickey Thomas?
Probably.
Starbucks and heart and soul.
I won't make you listen to the whole thing, but if
you know what? Fun facts about Howard Schultz at Starbucks. First of all, his neighbors, his backyard neighbors at in Seattle for the longest time, through, I guess, the early early mid-ish 90s, that would be Kurt and Courtney Cobain.
Really?
That's right. And Mrs. Cobain used to occasionally walk across the backyard and come have a cup of tea with Mrs. Schultz.
Oh, boy. You know,
I had a lot to talk about. And Mr. Schultz's best friend on the planet, he told me himself when I interviewed him 10 years ago, that would be Mr. Kenny G.
Really?
Kid you not.
It's a strange world.
Yeah.
There's
I thought Carrot Top's best friend was Kenny G.
That is also true.
He gets around.
Have you seen Carrot Top lately?
Not so that I would remember. I mean, on ads and stuff.
You'd remember him if you'd seen him recently with his shirt off. that's the furrowed brow right now is really what sells your whole expression.
Questioning why he's here.
Let's not talk about it. So Peter Carlin. So now that we've got a cozy 9 minutes, do you have any ghost stories? Ever seen any specters, spirits, spooks, haunts, goats?
Nope.
Okay.
But I want to, though. I think it would be sort of groovy, except for that it would be really scary.
That's what I'm saying. I feel left out. And I feel like they pass me over,
Just
like Jesus does, because they know I'm a non-believer, and so they don't appear to me.
They're all stigmata.
They're all
flipping you off.
That's what I'm saying. Well, no, they're like, what? Why? What's the point, you know? So what are you going to do? Well, let's talk about a couple things. First of all, the bookie is out in the real world
in real
now,
form,
right?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Catch a Wave, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. So, now, I remember you first taking a sabbatical, like 2 years ago, right? Year and a half?
Year and a half.
And so you, the last time we had an extensive discussion about this, is it that you went and interviewed Brian Wilson and then the hotel lost all your interview tapes?
Yeah, that was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But I had transcribed the Brian tapes. It was other stuff I'd done. That was when I was working on this article for American Heritage Magazine, and that must have been 2 years ago.
Did they ever find your tapes? Are they just floating around out there?
Oh, no, God, those are gone. Those are long gone. Those probably went in the garbage somewhere. You know, the real interview I lost was this terrific dinner I had with Van Dyke Parks, who was the guy that co-wrote Smile, among many, many other things. But I know Van Dyke. He's been a good friend of mine for a long time.
Well, never mind.
It's like, well, you know, it's still a little awkward. I mean, he's this really cool guy, and we go out to dinner.
Is he?
Yeah.
See, and I was about that. I'm glad you sort of said, he's been a good friend of mine right as I was about to open my mouth and go, is that guy just a pretentious tool? And I only ask.
Yeah, no.
I don't know him, you never know who to believe in Beach Boys stories because all the camps are so fiercely divided and so acrimonious.
Mm-hmm.
There is no, it seems like, and here's the reason I'm looking forward to reading your book, because there is no middle ground. There's no objective voice in any of these Beach Boys stories. There's only, like, Brian's version, which is addled, and there's, like, Mike Love's version, which is hostile and stupid.
Yeah.
And so you hear Brian, you hear Mike Love going, well, Van Dyke Parks is just a jerk. Screw that. It's like you never know what to believe about any of these personal interactions. Let me ask you this. Now, I had a lot of people email me this question specifically for you.
Oh, really?
And the question is, a guy, Rob, emailed me this, and he phrased the question in exactly this way. He said, is there anyone on Earth who does not believe that Mike Love is a gigantic tool?
Yeah, Mike Love. And presumably his young daughter, who I heard him overheard him on the phone being and he was being terrifically sweet and warm with her, and what else? His wife. He's been married for 15 years this time, which is terrific because it's like his ninth wife.
Well, this
one's apparently sticking.
Well, he's like a really hardcore Republican, isn't he?
No, Mike is very confused. On the one hand, he likes powerful people and he likes hanging out with powerful people, and he also likes people who tell him that they're going to cut his taxes. But as he says, he said to me in one interview, he said, well, you know, it's not like we're all that. And when he meant we, I was actually kind of mostly talking about him. It's not like we're all that politically savvy or nothing. I mean, it's like literally, because I was asking him, like,
shock.
My point was, how could you be such a down-the-line Republican when you also spend, like, the real political work that you do is all this pro-environmental stuff.
Right.
And yet you're actively supporting and raising money for people who are gutting the very programs that you say that you support. And he sort of furrowed his brow and said,
"Mike, no understand question."
Yeah, well, you know, it's just you're not dealing with a bunch of super sophisticated people when you climb into the Beach Boys.
Well, because they live in that bubble of, you know,
weirdness. I know, and they were never, you know, they were never particularly, and Mike in particular didn't put a whole lot of store in book learning back in the day. And look, you know, and then they've been, I think, when you become super famous and powerful and rich when you're 20,
what do you have to let?
There's no percentage in turning 21. Or developing the kind of sophistication that would go along with
it. Well, you just live in a state of permanently retarded adolescence.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not even saying that's a bad thing. I wish I've done that to a certain degree, but certainly not to the degree that you have the ability to if you're that rich and that whatever. So the Beach Boys to me are, and the danger, of course, we can just wank about the Beach Boys for like 10 hours, but I mean, the Beach Boys to me are this perfect, almost Shakespearean story in that, I forget what it is, but there's a weapon that the military developed, and I forget what it is, but it's some sort of bomb that you drop in a city. It's like a gasoline bomb, basically. And what it is, it uses the surrounding oxygen to have this huge fireball unleashed, destroys everything, kills everybody, renders the whole place, you know, destroyed. But then it doesn't leave burning fires. It's perfect if they drop it before the military goes in, because it destroys everything, but then it puts itself out.
Is that a neutron bomb?
The neutron, it's similar. It's a different bomb, but it's similar. But anyway, you drop it, it destroys everything, but then it goes, and it puts itself out, and then it's fine. And to me, that's kind of what the Beach Boys are, because the Beach Boys are this, it's this story where at the end of it, no one escaped or got away clean or came out on the good end. I mean, you know, Carl dies of cancer, Dennis drowns, Brian is crazy, Mike Love is shunned and hated, all, you know, Al Jardine, all of those guys, it's just fractious lawsuits and acrimony and whatever. You know, Murray Wilson sells the songs for like a fraction of what they're worth, nobody owns them. The only thing that survived is like this jewel, and the jewel is the songs themselves.
Yeah.
Everybody else went down in the ferocious black wake of this whole story.
You know, it's true. The weird thing, or the beautiful thing, in a sense, is that, you know, as of like 3 years ago, you would have, that was exactly right. It was a horrible, horrible tragedy, you know, of a story. Because you had this great kind of utopian and beautiful vision of life on the far west, you know. It was the musical sort of, personification, and it's probably not the right word, but of this kind of cultural dream that has always kind of fired the American spirit, which is this idea that you go to the West, you go into this untamed horizon, and you transform yourself and carve off a piece of it, and it can be this beautiful kind of communal thing. I mean, and that's every song they did, from, you know, Surf and Safari to Surfer Girl, you know, all those sweet sort of poignant romantic songs of the early 60s, you know, and then it got, you know, and then it began to kind of transform itself as Brian's muse became that much more sophisticated, and it got into the music itself. And that's, wouldn't it be nice, and those beautiful sort of amazing artsy sounds that were both hugely sophisticated and yet also instantly hummable, and the kids could dig it, and everyone could dig it, and everything. And, you know, and yet that got immediately corrupted and turned into, you know, those sort of doddering Beach Boys pretending to be the surfers that they never were on stage for 30 years, singing the same six songs over and over and over again, you know, with much less feeling every single time, and yet America laps it up. But the thing is, in the last couple of years, I think since Brian has really managed to, you know, I mean, yeah, he's a bizarro guy. He is, you know, I like to say he's weirder than you can imagine and not as crazy as you might think. Because on the one hand, yeah, he presents like a complete lunatic. But on the other hand, I think he is actually, for the last 10, 15 years or so, been a pretty happy dude.
He seems like he does have, and I don't really know him. I've met him once for like 12 seconds.
Yeah.
I only know this based on interviews, and I've seen him live a couple times, and he seems like a guy who, at last, is just kind of doing what he wants, at least, which he wasn't for a long time.
You know, he's rich enough. He's got a wife and family that he digs, and then he managed to pull Smile out of the flames, you know, and take this thing. It was like, you know, think back to Dickens, think back to Miss Havisham's Wedding Cake, and it's like this thing has been rotting at his feet for almost 40 years, and you would think, this is so full of rats, I don't want to know anything about it. The only rational thing to do is to leave it behind and never think of it again, you know, and pretend it never existed. But the guy found the courage somehow, you know, prompted along by his wife and other people to go back and say, all right, I'm going to make this right. I'm going to dig back into this thing. I'm going to revive it. I'm going to breathe life into this thing and turn it from this horrible rotting corpse into a living piece of art. And he did, and it was a big hit, and he toured around the world, and people gave him, standing ovations from, Copenhagen to Portland, Oregon.
I got to tell you, and it's for me, there was a real, when I saw him at the Baghdad. Mm-hmm. No, not the Baghdad, the Aladdin.
Yeah.
And then I saw him with Paul Simon at the Gorge a while after
I saw that.
And, he was much better than Paul Simon, first of all. And that band he had with him, the Wonderments, was just jaw-dropping.
It's like 2-3 Wonderments plus also a bunch of other guys.
Just amazing. But
yeah,
I got to tell you, seeing him live was, and obviously, his singing, his performing, or whatever, those things have all been diminished by time and trauma and whatever, but seeing him perform, it's like I could almost hear in my head this, like, sort of clicking sound of the circle kind of closing,
mm-hmm.
in that, he was finally at a place where he was able to go out and do what he wanted to do, which is to be an artist who.
Yeah, and be appreciated for that by people who really dig it. It's like I've seen Brian play shows for now almost 30 years. I mean, literally the first time I saw him was in 1976 when he was like a corpse on stage. And, and saw him play with the Beach Boys half a dozen times and have seen him play solo shows, 8 or 9 over the last, 6, 7, 8 years. And, those first solo tours in 99, I saw him in New York. I was living back there then. He was it was difficult the first time, they were never sure how far he was going to make it through. But, when I saw him play, I don't know if you went to the show at the Schnitz last summer.
I did not.
Almost exactly a year ago. And I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl at the tour closer like a week later. But, that show at the Schnitz was the best Brian show I have ever seen.
Really?
And it included everything from, the hits all the way through the entire performance of Smile. And to me, the real signal moment was at the very beginning of the Smile set. There was some electrical problem with his equipment, and he sat up there, and the stage was dark, as it is when they begin that set. But I was sitting up pretty close, and I could see something was going on, and people were crawling around. And you'd think, like, ordinarily in Brian Wilson world, that would be like, oh, no, the spirits are against me, and he would completely freak out. But he sat there, he looked around, he pointed at a couple things, they cleared it up, seconds passed, and then he looked up and he said, okay, we're ready to smile. And then they started singing and the lights came up and it was this incredible, 45-minute nonstop performance of this music, some of which had been sitting, mythical, legendary for nearly 40 years, and he just pulled it right off.
We're here with Peter Carlin, TV critic for The Oregonian, author of Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of Brian Wilson. So I'll tell you what, Sarah, I'll go ahead and I'll take us into this one here. I've got it over here. We'll do this. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. You stay there. It's AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Show. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the program. We got Likas coming up at 3. Donna Mike at 7. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show now contains 4.4% repeating. More entertainment every single day. We're here with Peter Carlin, TV critic for The Oregonian, author of Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of Brian Wilson, and arch enemy of Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, my man.
All right, so I was talking about this earlier that I sort of just know, and we've got people. Do you feel a cool breeze?
Yeah, they messed around with your.
Hey, Will has. Will turned on the air conditioning.
Yeah.
Okay, now you know...
I would have known that we had it.
Okay, but you know he's going to screw with us now. You know that he's going to make it like 65 degrees in here. You know that that's what's going to happen. That's how...
The studio's full of ghosts, right?
That's how...
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun. Rick Emerson, a talk show host in Portland, Oregon, had stated many times he didn't believe in ghosts. No, you know, because that's how engineers think. They're going to make it like 60 degrees.
Then someone tells you that I died last night. He was never there.
No, Rick Emerson died in a fire in 1974. all right, we're here with Peter Carlin. We have two things. A, you turned down a party at the Rockstar Supernova Mansion.
I cannot believe
that. Yeah, I know.
You got invited to go to the Rockstar Supernova Mansion where our good friend Storm Large is competing, and you're all like, and this was Peter's excuse. Well, I don't know. I didn't want to stay up really late. I had to work.
Well, I'd been up really late the night
before. Oh, please. What kind of excuse is that? I had to. How un-rock and roll can you be? I didn't want to stay up late at this party with the guy from Motley Crue.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think also I had to go to that Fox stuff the next day. There's a segue for you. It was Fox began the next day.
Mean Fox? Do you mean where Bill O'Reilly works?
It's the very same place.
All right, so what is going on? And I won't pretend to know more than I do because I'm sort of out of the loop on this. What? Right. Just as you don't really listen to our show, but you pretend to.
You don't really read my column.
I don't really
that's
read
cool.
your column,
that's
but
cool.
I pretend
that's,
to.
That's right on. Me
so
I barely even write it.
So what's going on with you and Bill O'Reilly?
He's angry with me. Well, you know, I wrote this column a couple weeks ago after this day of Fox stuff at our little TV Critics Association press tour, and Roger Ailes, the main Fox dude, showed up to tell us a thing or two about himself and Fox and our faults and stuff, and it's like, cool, I can dig that. And then I wrote this whole column about the whole Fox empire and the theme that seems to hold them together, which has something to do with just sheer audacity, and
right.
I can, you know, I can dig it. It's like, and people love it, so there you are. And I wrote this thing at the very end. I said something about, well, you know, and O'Reilly is like huge and popular, and part of the thrill is that he not only takes people to task for their actual, you know, the text of their beliefs or whatever, but then he insults them along the way.
Yeah.
He likes to call people names, and there you go. So O'Reilly, of course, picks up on this, and it's like literally the last sentence of a very long story. And but he's got some overactive Google search thing, and so he like figures this out, and he may still be mad at me for our little run in 3 years ago when I kind of pantsed him over this whole business of whether he did or didn't say he won a
Peabody Award.
And he called me and left a voicemail saying that I owed him a traction.
Now, was that you that started the whole...
Well, Franken started it, kind of. And then I just was...
Yeah.
I was just sort of like... writing what was going on that summer,
right,
and how he got into this whole deal with Franken, and just repeating what was in the media, and then he like tried to bully me into retracting what was already well known.
You told him to pound
sand. And he threw down and told me on this voicemail, because he would never talk to me in person, like, you know, you're gonna just go back and read the transcripts. So I went back and read the transcripts, and it's like, hey, here he's saying it. Whoa, he's saying it again. Whoa, here
he claimed like 40 times that he won a
here
Peabody.
Here he says they won two Peabody Awards. The first one wasn't good enough. They had two. And, you know, they never won a Peabody Award, and the one award they won was a year and a half after he left the show.
Right.
So it's like they had nothing to do with it. So he may still be a little chapped about that. And so he saw this thing and just flew off the old handle and then, you know, began to disrespect me on his TV show and his radio show.
He was
show.
Up in your grill?
He was way up in my grill. Only he was nearly behind me. And then he was... So then... But then it's like I, like, shrug it off because who cares? But then, like, MediaMatters.org picks up on it, and then Franken's yammering about it on his show, and I'm getting all these emails from people like, did you see this? Did you hear this? And it's like, oh, my God. And then I wrote, like, he accused me on his thing of not giving any examples. Well, it's like, well, that's shooting fish in a barrel. And
seriously.
And so, you know, Media Matters had printed just like a brief half dozen things. And I've seen enough O'Reilly to know how he works and how this goes. So I just took a couple of those and added a couple of mine. He'd gone on the radio to call me mentally unbalanced last time. So I thought, well, there's
fantastic.
One right there. You know, that was
right.
calling me
totally.
So I used that, and then he got, like, totally apoplectic about that, and then he did a whole other thing, you know, and he goes, oh, this guy's an idiot, you know, and it's just like, okay, there he is again, not calling people names. And
there is, I have to say, there's something, charming is the wrong word, but there is something horribly noxiously charismatic about that guy. And you know what it is? It's the feeling that when he's talking to somebody in studio that he disagrees with, It's the feeling that at any moment he might just go across the counter,
yeah,
and just tear out their windpipe.
He, you know, they called me at one point and wanted me to come on the show. You know, one of his evil little monkeys was calling me up and trying to like wheedle out like whether I had.
I love the word wheedle.
Well, like, did you do your own research on this or where? Because they knew, they recognized these things from the thing, and I was like, look, dude, I watched the show. I know how he works. I got that from the Media Matters thing, just because I wasn't, you know, going to go back and watch hours and hours of tape or whatever. But, you know, but I've seen the show, and there was enough of these. So then, so O'Reilly was using that, like, he doesn't even do his own research. He was like, and he was talking to me on the air. He's like, listen, they pay you to do your own reporting. And I'm like, hey, jackass, you didn't do your reporting. You got your little monkey to call me up there. So it's like, you know, I mean, but, you know, I feel like, I think we worked. I feel like he and I have been collaborating.
You got a Martin and Lewis thing going on.
Yeah, it's like, I think he must have a really slow week. There's nothing going on. So it's like, we got to go to this clown
in
Oregon.
You're in the go-to file. You're in the evergreen
way
pile.
Way down. Yeah. And that, but it's like that's how low he's sunk. And so we went to, anyway, but it's fun working with him. He's a great guy.
It is.
You know, we hang. We go to picnics.
Well, here's a brief list of things we didn't. Well, let me ask you real quickly.
Okay,
Sarah, how much time do we have?
4 minutes.
All right.
Is your clock fast?
We got like three different clocks and they all keep different time. And apologize, Scotty. I apologize. We're not going to get to any of these calls except for we'll take Mailman Chris here to wrap up in here. But I apologize, Brad. Not that we're not going to get to any of these calls. I'm
sorry,
an ass.
Guys.
I'm an ass.
I blame myself.
Yes, let's blame you. Okay, real quickly, stories about Brian Wilson. That I have heard or read over the years in many things, including his pseudo-autobiography.
Oh, it's a pop quiz. Okay, let's go.
True or false?
Against the clock.
Beaten by his dad with a 2x4.
Probably.
Forced to relieve himself on a newspaper in the living room in front of the family.
Story told often. I've heard also the variations that it was a plate.
But
then the other versions of it is that then he...
Really splitting hairs at that point, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, you know, these are these sort of very picturesque things that may or may not have happened, stories that were told and then subsequently denied but then retold, and you never really know. But I think that...
Germ of truth?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, this is a guy who definitely, he had a prosthetic eye, Murray Wilson did.
Right.
Because he had a bad accident at Goodyear when he worked there. And he used to, when, you know, the kids had been misbehaving or he wanted them to understand something about his experience.
Look at the inside of my eye socket.
Well, no, he would pop that sucker out and force them to, like, stare into it. And when you're, like, which is bad enough.
When you're like five.
When you're 30, you don't want to do that. And when you're five, I think, it's like, it bends your mind just a little bit.
Welcome, Mailman Chris, the official stenographer of the Rick Emerson Show. How are you, sir?
Swimmingly.
All right. Okay. All right. How far behind? I've got this new thing to keep me on schedule, which isn't really working. Okay. That I, at the end of the show, I owe a push-up to the collective for every item not gotten to.
Okay.
That I promoted. How many things did I fail to get through today? That was bad.
So you got the double Brittany. You got the Cannibal. You got Nanette Sosa. You got Constantini and the one and only Peter Ames Carlin. Unfortunately, you did not get the worst song ever. You did not get the Job Watch or the Religious Nutcase Watch.
So I owe 3 push-ups.
You owe 3 more. That would put you at 32.
Sons of bitches. All right. Bunch of jackals.
When do you have to pay up?
Well, thank you, Chris.
Have a good day.
There you go. That's Chris, Mailman Chris, official stenographer. Well, the deal is, that's what our betting unit is on this show. We don't bet with money. We bet with push-ups.
That's cool.
And so the deal is, though, the push-ups have to be given. They can be given at any increment at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah always waits until we're in public somehow.
Some sort of listener party type of situation.
Well, that's exactly. We'll be in stage and she will just be, you know, she'll call me on my cell phone from the back of the room. She'll be like, give me 5. And then I have to give her 5.
You have to give her 7. That rocks.
Yeah. So we're doing it to try to keep me on track. It's not really working. All right. Well, we got like 90 seconds here. So you got to come back. Swear,
okay.
Promise that
sure.
You'll come back in the studio.
Right.
When?
Yeah. When will you have
next
me?
Monday.
Next Monday. Okay. We can.
Sarah,
you're
a witness.
Okay.
So you will come back in the studio next Monday.
And we'll get you in earlier next time, too.
Next, we'll have you in there. Or we promise not to get off track with ghost stories.
Okay. I think I can do that. I'm pretty sure. I'm just running it through the old system. See, next week I'm going to L.A. later at the end of the week.
Yeah, I know. Life is hard when you're a jet-setting journalist with parties to turn down. What other parties? You can turn out an invitation to the Playboy Mansion next year so you can tell me you did it. I didn't go.
Yeah, seriously. I didn't want to wear my pajamas.
Okay.
I'll
You almost swore just there.
Nope.
Okay. Well, next week, here's what we got to talk about. We got to talk about Aaron Sorkin.
Okay, yeah, you know, and I was looking around for that DVD, my friend, and I actually went across the office to beg one off of another guy, but he didn't have his either. And mine, I have every...
Is it like a self-destroying DVD?
Somebody ripped it off, man.
Sounds
because
outrageous.
I have every other NBC DVD, like, sitting on the floor behind my desk in my most important file, and that one is gone.
How convenient.
Doesn't that just blow?
Yes,
so
it does.
Could be,
less
but it
so
might
for
be
you
in my home
already
office. It might be in my office at home, and then I've got to go check it out there. So,
all right.
Anyway.
All right. Well, okay, so Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys. See how, even though you have failed to do your part of this,
am I supposed to say the title again?
No.
That would be Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, available everywhere from Rodale Books.
There you go. All right. Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Heart full of hate, so forth. And whatnot.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
All right. Thank you, Peter. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. Scotty J., happy birthday. Tim Riley in the newsroom. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Thank you all. See you tomorrow at noon, 21 hours from now. Like us next. See you all tomorrow. Bye.
What do you think you're looking at, sugar?